Northland Views for Wednesday, July 22nd, Mark DeGroff sitting in for Wallace Kleindienst. Public comment at the July 7th Apache County Board of Supervisors meeting, again centered on opposition to Black Ridge and other proposed renewable energy development, with residents pressing for a moratorium, raising concerns about process, water, health, and property values, and submitting written materials for the record. The strongest focus came from a written report that was submitted by Brittany Miner, who represented a St. John's grassroots group that were opposed to the wind farm proposals. The report asked the board to order an independent investigation into the county's renewable energy ordinance process, developer access, and related county land discussions. The board moved quickly through its regular business, including final budget approvals, recognition of a county legal assistant, and approval of a consent agenda item that names County Manager Clerk Ryan Peterson as Apache County's official representative for state hazard mitigation assistance programs tied to disaster prevention grant work. The Planning and Zoning Commission's June recommendation for a renewable energy moratorium was not placed on the July 7th Board of Supervisors agenda for discussion, even as other matters tied to the Commission's June 3rd meeting did appear on the agenda and were approved. The Independent has a pending public records request seeking transmission details that are related to the moratorium recommendation, along with other county public records and requests submitted over the past month that remain pending. Meneer, speaking on behalf of concerned St. John's and Apache County residents, told supervisors she was submitting a written report and supporting public records into the record. She said the report was not asking the board to assume wrongdoing, but to investigate what she described as serious questions raised by county records involving Triple Oak Power, Black Ridge Renewable Power, LLC, and the Apache County's Renewable Energy Ordinance rewrite. In her submitted materials, Meneer argued residents were told that early draft ordinance materials were not publicly available, while public records showed renewable energy developers had received draft ordinance and comprehensive plan materials, submitted comments and red lines, and had direct access to county staff before residents had comparable access. She also pointed to records she said showed separate discussions between Triple Oak and county staff regarding a possible solar lease on county-owned controlled land, including acreage, payments, lease terms, and the county leadership involvement. She said they asked the board to seek an independent investigation into developer access, ordinance influence, county land lease discussions, real AZ-related communications, possible conflicts of interest, and whether the public was denied equal access to the process. She also asked the board to pause any Black Ridge-related conditional use permit, ordinance adoption, or renewable energy sightings decision until an investigation is completed and the findings are publicly released. Her written report framed the issue as one of fairness in the public process, not simply whether residents support or oppose wind or solar. Other speakers during call to the public raised related concerns and, in several cases, submitted handouts or written statements for the record to expand on points that they could only briefly address at the microphone. Monica Boning told supervisors she had provided ARS 11-833, and a citizen-prepared moratorium framework, which she said was based on a similar 2023 Mojave County moratorium. Benning said that the framework laid out a clear goal, measurable objectives, and a work plan with timelines, and argued that state law ties moratorium justifications to essential emergency service facilities, which include police, fire, and water supply. She said updating the renewable energy ordinance is important, but argued that radio communications and water supply baselines are also critical parts of that work. Karen Glennon told the supervisor she was there to share research on the health effects of wind turbines and said her handout was intended to show both the range of claimed effects and the amount of information that already exists on the issue. Her submitted materials focused heavily on sleep disruption, stress responses, inner ear effects, dizziness, headaches, and other health concerns she said are associated with the wind turbine noise and low-frequency sound. And in other business, supervisors unanimously approved an amendment to the county's manufactured housing inspection fee schedule. Final fiscal year 26-27 budgets for Apache County and the county districts, a 10-year accent agreement for body-worn cameras, taser equipment, and related sheriff's office technology services, renewal of the assessor's consulting agreement with Denise Jones, an intergovernmental argument, or agreement that is, with the Arizona Department of Transportation to reconstruct the school bus loop on County Highway C-420 to State Route 264, the annual culvert bid award to Pacific Ponderosa Company, and the fiscal 2027 drug, gang, and violent crime grant from the Arizona Criminal Justice Commission. Also on consent, supervisors approved naming County Manager Ryan Patterson as Apache County's authorized representative for the Arizona Department of Military Affairs Hazard Mitigation Assistance Program. This makes Patterson the county's designated contact and the signer for state-administered mitigation grant programs intended to help fund projects that reduce future disaster damage. U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami, milepost 227 through 243, will be closed from 9 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon, July 22nd and 23rd, today and tomorrow, to continue the bridge replacement project there. The detour is eastbound U.S. 60 drivers can use southbound State Route 177 through Winkleman to northbound State Route 77. Westbound U.S. 60 drivers may use southbound State Route 77 through Winkleman to northbound State Route 177. Due to the roughly 75-mile length of this detour, drivers may want to consider planning travel before 9 a.m. and after 2 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon. The detour is estimated to add an additional hour for any trips between Superior and Miami. Another full closure of U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami, tentatively scheduled from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on July 29th and the 30th. Lane restrictions, speed restrictions, and a 12-foot vehicle width restriction will be in place for the duration of the project. Oversight loads may be accommodated with advance notice. Drivers should allow extra travel time, use caution, and be prepared to slow down and merge safely when approaching and traveling through all these work zones. For more information and to sign up for email alerts, you can visit azdot.gov, U.S. 60, Queen Creek Bridge Project. And looking at the election results, here at just an update. It's a one-stop page for the races that affect Apache County. The preliminary results are expected to be released at 8 o'clock p.m. and will be updated as the results come in. So let's take a look here. St. John Council members, the candidate is Jackson Brown. He received 357 votes. Joe Green, 342. Tony Rakovitz, 340. And Mandy Huth, 296. Eagerdown Council members, Bruce Burnham, 570, Robert Ray, 486, Reggie Peterson, 477, Dale Thompson, 436. For Springerville Mayor, Steve West, 115, Florencia Lozoya Soto, 73, Don Scott, 39, Brianna Laney, 42. Springerville Council members, Bridget S. Laney, 160, Justin Burrell, 160, and Tricia Sparza, 93. For the Proposition 409, the Town of Eager, yes, 464, no, 257. The Apache County Clerk of Superior Court, Semesita Bigay, 5,652. Wendy Shepherd, 4,193. Apache County Justice of the Peace, North Star, Precinct 3, Democrat, Jay Yellowhorse, 5,575. Fifilia Bradley, 3,500. Apache County Justice of the Peace, St. John's Precinct 2, Republican, Butch L. Gunnels, 556, Jared Robin, 339. State Senator, District 6, Democrat, Jamesita Preshlaki, 4,218, and Myron Sosi, 5,648 in the county. In the state, 13,109 for Peshkali and 10,799 for Tosi. Representative, District 6, Democrat, Preshikawa, 5,449, Ian Teller, 4,849, Angela Walker Maloney, 2,670, statewide, Peshlake, 14,374, Teller, 10,070, Angela Walker Maloney, 9,384. For Arizona Governor, Republicans, Andy Biggs, 2,491, Schweikert, 375, Scott Neely, 457, Ken Maselli, 238, in the county. In the state, Biggs, 379,770, Schweikert, 76,187, Scott Neely, 37,032, Ken Maselli, 24,707. Arizona Secretary of State for the Republicans, Alexander Colodin, in the county, 1995, in the state, 291,115, Gina Svoboda, in the county, 1319, in the state, 197,515. For the Arizona Attorney General, Republican, Warren Peterson, county, 1875, state, 281,440, Rodney Glassman, county, 1,561, in the state, 2019 and 59. The Arizona Treasurer, Republican, Elijah Norton, county, 1699, state, 274,221. Catherine Haley, county, 1689, state, 216,298. Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction for the Republicans, Kimberly Yee, 1545, county, 271,620, state, Thomas Horn, 2024, county, 240,624 in the state. Arizona Corporation Commission for the Republicans, Kevin Thompson, 767, county, 275,660, state, Ralph Heap, 1766, county, 251,763, state, and Nicholas Nick Myers, 1,286, county, 240,220 for the state. And the Arizona Governor with No Labels Party, Terry Ann Houlihan in the county, 157, in the state, 5,077. Hugh Lytle in the county, 143, state, 4,039. And turning to the Payson Roundup, Flaherty wins a decisive victory in Payson's mayoral race. Payson Council Brett Flaherty on Tuesday unseated incumbent Mayor Steve Otto. Based on the unofficial vote tally on Wednesday morning, Flaherty had 53% of the vote with 2,677 votes to Otto's 2,205. About 93% of voters used mail-in ballots. Only 675 of the 5,053 votes cast were in person on Election Day. Flaherty's margin was about the same in both in the mail-in and in-person voting. Total voter turnout was at about 31%, including 44% of Republicans, 41% of the Democrats. Independent voters, by and large, chose one party or the other so they could vote in the statewide primaries. In the three-seat council race, businessman Bobby Lowry and orthodontist Ben McDowell were the top vote-getters. They ran on a slate with Flaherty. However, Brooke Myers came in third, although he ran on a state led by Otto. Payson Clean founder Jesse Berry ran with Flaherty slate, but was edged out by Myers. Nonetheless, the results would appear to give Flaherty a workable majority on the often divided town council. The tally on Wednesday morning was still unofficial, but it is unlikely to change, and the results came despite a huge advantage in spending by the Otto and the Payson United Political Action Committees. The contest between Flaherty and Otto was intense, but it was mostly civil. At least during their debates and ongoing interactions in the town council meetings, social media attacks by supporters often had a different tone. Flaherty, a local dentist and a champion steer roper, said he wanted to work together with the council members to come up with solutions to the town's problems. This emphasis came against the backdrop of 2 years of sharp divisions on the council. Flaherty consistently stressed the need to fund infrastructure to support the growth of the town's tourist-dominated economy. He also said the council should ensure the town takes into account the needs of families and its young people. Flaherty said he wanted to ensure Payson became a place where his kids could find jobs and remain once they grew up. Otto came to office 2 years ago on a platform that was sharply critical of the previous town manager and the council's decision to seek a $70 million bond issue supported by an increase in the property tax. He lambasted the council for closing Taylor Pool in Rumsey Park. He also objected to the use of supermajority to use an emergency clause to enact key ordinances, which protected those actions from repeal in a voter referendum. Otto said the previous town manager had too much power and said the town staff heaped too many contradictory requirements on developers and on businesses alike. Flaherty was on the council and voted in favor of most of the policies that Otto most sharply criticized. Countywide, the election attracted just 31% of the registered voters. That included 43% of the 16,833 registered Republicans and 41% of the 7,484 Democrats. Turnout among the 9,318 nonpartisan voters was just 0.5%. But that's misleading, since most independents requested either Republican or Democratic ballot so that they could vote in the statewide races. Turnout among the handful of Libertarians was about 16%. The new No Labels Party had just 353 registered voters, but 61% of them turned out to vote. A Republican primary ballot had a lot more high-profile races for statewide offices. The Democratic primary ballot generally had just one choice for most offices, which ordinarily would have decreased any voter turnout. So far in 2026, Arizona's gotten off lucky when it comes to wildfires. The Tonto National Forest this week lifted fire restrictions as a result of a week of monsoon storms. Northern Arizona has an ongoing, relatively small daily chance of rain throughout the rest of the coming week. Cities and counties generally mirror the restrictions in the national forest. This means residents can resume using backyard fire pits and visitors to the forest can resume building campfires. It also removed a variety of other restrictions, although fireworks always remain illegal in the forest. The Tonto Forest managed to avoid actual forest closures this year. Unfortunately, almost as soon as it canceled red flag fire warning across much of northern Arizona, the National Weather Service this week issued flash flood warnings. The monsoon has delivered some big storms, including rain intensity that can vary dramatically over short distances in the monsoon season. The storms haven't done much to restore the reservoir levels, with C.C. Cragen at 54% and Roosevelt Lake at just 38% full. However, storms early in the week increased flows in the Salt River to 121% of normal and flows in the Verde River to 417% of normal, this according to the Salt River Project. Lots of residents at this point heave a sigh of relief and stop thinking about wildfires, though preparation remains a year-round challenge, and early monsoons also bring the threat of lightning in still drought-plagued forests. Almost all Arizona still swelters in moderate to severe drought. This promoted the RIM Wildfire Awareness Team to retitle its August 1st seminar on wildfire danger, Don't Be Fooled. The class taught by veteran firefighter Alan McKay at the Payson Library from 10 to 12:30 on Saturday, August 1st, will also include information on evacuations from Edgar Olivo of the Red Cross. In addition, Janet Dean will talk about the Arizona Public Service Program that shuts off power to areas during high-risk fire conditions. down power lines in 2018, sparked a fire that consumed Paradise, California in 2018, and led to the bankruptcy of Pacific Gas and Electric. The biggest fire so far in 2026 in Arizona was the 27,000-acre pocket fire near Sedona. It generated a lot of smoke and prompted evacuations but destroyed no structures. Other Arizona fires this year included the 4,000-acre Havasu Fire in Mojave County, the 1,200-acre Hazen Fire in Maricopa, the 5,000-acre Rock Canyon Fire near the Arizona-Utah border, the 12,000-acre Gila Fire on the Tonto Forest in Gila County, and the 1,600-acre Steamboat Fire in Gila and Pinal Counties. Other states have had a much rougher time, including Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. All three suffered a record-breaking dry winter, severe drought, and high temperatures. Three firefighters died battling a blaze up in Colorado. So far nationally this year, firefighters have battled 41,000 wildfires, the highest total number of fires since 2016. Those 2026 fires so far have burned some 4 million acres, second only to the 5.5 million acres consumed in 2022. Currently, some 21,000 firefighters continue to battle 72 major wildfires still active on 1.5 million acres, this according to the National Interagency Fire Center. The wildlife preparedness level has climbed to 5, the highest setting. This means virtually all of the nation's firefighting resources are now fully committed. Nationally, wildfires this year have caused 32 deaths and have destroyed more than 325 structures. Europe and Canada have also had an exceptionally devastating wildfire year. More than 800 fires burned in drought-stricken forests in Canada have sent a thick blanket of smoke that wafted across the eastern United States, triggering widespread air quality alerts, and most of those fires are burning in remote areas are still out of control. One recent study published in the National Journal Nature found that wildfire smoke in the United States contributes to an estimated 40,000 premature deaths annually. This according to a summary of the research published by National Public Radio, NPR. The projected increase in wildfires, driven by the continuing rise in the average global temperatures, could increase the toll to 70,000 premature deaths annually in the coming decades. Research shows that changes in climate create warmer and drier conditions, leading to longer and more active fire seasons, according to a research summary on the NOAA website. Increases in temperatures and the thirst of the atmosphere due to human-caused climate change have increased aridity in the forest fuels during the fire season. These drivers were found to be responsible for just about half of the observed decrease in the moisture content of the fuels here in the western United States, their forests from 79 through 2015, and the doubling of forest fire burned area over the period of 1984 through 2015. For much of the western United States, a projected increase of an additional 2 degrees could drive a six-fold increase in the wildfires, according to analysis. Explore Collectibles and Famulus Finds have combined into a larger location, which is now located at 904 North Beeline Highway, Unit C. The business celebrated its grand opening on July 4th, welcoming customers to tour the expanded space. Owner Jim Kasarsis said the move will allow the store to offer more merchandise and create space for community game nights. The store carries a variety of trading card games and collectibles, including Pokemon blister packs, booster packs, and graded single cards. Customers will also find Magic, The Gathering, Disney, Lorcana, One Piece, and Star Wars trading cards. Kasarski said that he is finishing a dedicated game room where players can either watch or gather for games such as Magic, The Gathering, and Disney Locana. The expanded location also features a larger selection of pop culture collectibles. We will be bringing in 200 more Funkos. We're trying to meet the demand for superheroes and anime characters, he said. He said the combined two stories in one location will happen in about 2 weeks. He plans to continue expanding the inventory with additional trading card games, action figures, squishy toys, and memorabilia inspired by movies, television, video games, and animation. Animation is a style of animation that originated in Japan and has grown in popularity in recent years, particularly among younger people. Known for its distinctive visual style and a wide range of storytelling, anime spans genres that include action, drama, fantasy, and comedy. The shop also stocks anime figurines, Lego sets, novelty tin signs, and themed gifts. Several display cases feature antique collectibles, Native American beadwork, and jewelry. One feature that did not make the move from the previous location was the yarn section. Kasarsky said yarn sales didn't justify the space that it occupied, so he replaced it with a refrigerator, stocked with beverages. Kasarsky said he monitors customer interests and then adjusts inventory to reflect local demand, noting that many of his customers are gamers and collectibles. He plans to offer other sales and special promotions throughout the year. And those store hours remain Thursday through Saturday from 10:30 in the morning to 5 o'clock in the evening, and Monday and Sunday from noon to 5 o'clock p.m. Buy a bracelet, purchase a poem, invest in future leaders. By 8 a.m. on Saturday, the morning sun was already beating down on the Sawmill Crossing Plaza, where nearly 60 merchants' booths were arranged in rows in the parking lot. The weekly farmer's market gathers fresh baked goods, locally sourced honey, and organically grown fruits and vegetables, all in one place throughout the summer, in a fun environment with live music and a community vibe. There, a group of up-and-coming capitalists have been promoting their creations and displaying their products throughout the summer. The Young Entrepreneurs Program, which is supported by the Rim Country Regional Chamber of Commerce and community leaders, encourages kids from 9 to 14 to take a risk and kickstart a small business of their own. A lot of businesses have come together, not only to train them, but to have them come together and help them learn how to sell, count money back like they're doing here, said Rim County Regional Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Sharon Rukert. They're doing 4 weeks at the farmer's market, then they're going to go to the Swiss Village Christmas tree lighting, and they're going to Noli's Market on the 7th of November, and then they are going to do the Chamber Christmas Market on December 5th. Everybody who is having a big event has invited the young entrepreneurs to come, and they're not charging them. They're inviting them to come and sell their wares and support them. Rukert said that after every event, students discuss how to improve their displays and sales tactics. She said that after just 1 week, the students began accepting payments on Zelle and Cash App. And that's the Northland Views for this Wednesday, the 22nd of July. Back on Friday. Until then, stay cool, stay dry, and take care.